is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Tuesday. Thanks for hanging out with us here on the Lombardi Line on VSiN. Michael Lombardi out today. One last stop on his book tour, Promoting Football Done Right, which if you haven't got it yet, what are you doing? So we will miss our guy today, but fortunate to have an amazing relief pitcher in Will Hill. You've seen him all over the network. Also part of the Fox Sports family with the Bear Bets podcast, working with Chris the Bear Felica. Welcome in, Will. Thanks for doing this, buddy. How are you?
Stormy, I am excited. I am honored. I wish we had a better game from last night to discuss, but a lot to get to. Futures, awards, playoffs. We got some good guests, so it should be fun.
Yes, absolutely. A jam-packed 2 hours talking all things NFL and college football, news and notes, games to preview. And like you said last night on Monday Night Football, the good news is we had an NFL game last night. The bad news is we had that NFL game last night. Well, 27-6 ends up being the final. Chargers getting the win and cover against the Jets at MetLife Stadium. But it was a rough offensive performance from all areas. Did you have action on the game? How'd you unpack things?
Oh, I had the Jets. And honestly, I don't know how you are. I can't go to bed like when my bets are still in when I have action pending. I was almost rooting for, because I didn't think the Jets were going to cover it, you know, for most of the game. I was like, you know what? I hope the Chargers just put them away so I can go to sleep here. Eventually, I stayed up until the defensive touchdown. It's interesting. Sometimes you have to admit when you're lucky. We have to admit when you're unlucky. Yeah. Man, I was getting 3.5 in a game where neither team did anything on offense. And I know people, you know, you lose a bet, you can think of a million excuses of why you lost. I don't want to do that. But there were 7 fumbles in the game. The Chargers recovered 6 of them. There was a punt return for a touchdown. The Jets outgained them in terms of total yards. The Jets outgained them in terms of yards per play. If you're getting 3.5 in a game where nobody does anything, usually you're in pretty good shape. So that was, I think, a misleading box score. I'm not blown away by how the Chargers played. How could you be? I think the takeaway for this, I think this really killed the Jets' chances to make the playoffs, because if you got to 5-3, you got the Raiders this week, all right, you could just, hey, maybe you win this week and you just play 500 the rest of the way, you get to 10 wins. Now you sit there at 4-4. And let's face it, every time the Jets do win a game, it's like pulling teeth. It's like a mini miracle, like an act of God it takes for them to win these games. Now you're probably going to have to go 6-3 to get to 10 wins. If you get to 9, you're dealing with a scenario where, all right, the Chargers have a tiebreaker against you. So big picture, I think it's going to be very hard for the Jets to overcome this and make the playoffs. A painful game to watch. Let's be honest. That was a tough watch last night. And I think really a crippling loss for the Jets.
Yeah. And as somebody who early on in the game was like, you know what? The Chargers offense is struggling as much as they are right now. I'll take a live line plus 12.5 on the Jets. Even that was the wrong side, because just all the turnovers, they couldn't put it together. It was really unfortunate. And you kind of knew, and I say this, I feel like every week when we see the symbols for the team coming up across the board with the ESPN group making their picks. But when everybody comes up Jets, I feel like all the money was coming in on the Jets plus the points as well. And it took a long time to finally move off that 3.5 to the 3. Michael and I talked about that a little bit yesterday. He's like, it kind of feels a little bit trappy, and that ends up being the case. But you mentioned the playoffs. I mean, still 4-4. And oddly enough, because of the way things have played out, they're still in the thick of the hunt for the AFC East. But to make the playoffs, to your point, plus 250 to miss, minus 310. ESPN Analytics gives them just a 13% chance to make the playoffs. Their updated season win total at 8.5 as well. But because you mentioned that, I do think it's interesting, and I know we're talking about this every week, and it's probably not that worthwhile to bring up, but Aaron Rodgers was apparently asked by Derwin James after the game when he's going to be coming back out there. And he said in a few weeks, and we saw him doing the pregame shenanigans on the field again. He looked very perturbed every time that an ESPN camera cut to him on the sideline watching another turnover or another drive stall. Is that realistic in your mind? Just because you and I haven't talked about this before, do you think that there's potential that Aaron Rodgers could come back and just the spirit of Aaron Rodgers could be enough to lift them to a couple more of these wins that they otherwise might not have had?
Yeah, and you go back and you watch him say that and you rewatch it a few weeks. He said it very matter-of-factly, very casually. A few weeks could be 3, it could be 6. I've had this belief. I think the popular thing, you know, the common thing is when he says, hey, I'm going to come back this year, people kind of snicker or laugh. I actually think if they got into the playoffs, which I just mentioned, I think now it's going to be hard for them. Yeah. I actually think he's, you know, he thinks differently enough. He's, I don't want to say crazy, but he would actually probably return if they made the playoffs. I think it would be very possible as long as he got cleared. But the idea that he'd come back in a few weeks, I mean, this is what, September 11th, he ruptured his Achilles. I just think like he's not a few weeks away. That would be shocking to me. So, no, I don't think he's a few weeks away. I thought if they got were able to sneak in, maybe. But, you know, he said it very casually, very matter of the fact. It was very vague the way he said it. It was kind of a throwaway comment. So I don't read too much into it. I don't know if you feel differently.
I'm not a firm believer that he's going to beat science in general. But if he were to come out there, I still think that it's like the offensive line is so bad that I feel like even if he were to come back, maybe he'd only make it another four plays. It's really, really rough to watch. And I wonder if you are somebody who's a Jets fan or is invested in Jets futures or like yourself who bet them last night, how frustrated are you that the Jets didn't go out and try to grab somebody at the trade deadline, a veteran to at least like in the meantime, be that stopgap while you wait for Aaron Rodgers?
It's such a good point because, hey, once Rodgers got hurt, you're not winning the Super Bowl. So I understand, hey, you don't want to trade a second, a third, or even a fourth. You don't want to just throw good money after bad. And, man, can you imagine if they traded for Cousins like a few weeks ago that he got hurt with the Jets? It would just be the jokes and the memes would be nonstop. I did think watching that game last night, though, Josh Dobbs basically went for nothing. I mean, he basically went for a sandwich. I think it was like a seventh rounder or a seventh round swap. I don't know that Josh Dobbs with that offensive line, again, is he going to bring this team to the AFC title game? Probably not. He's better than Wilson, though. He's a serviceable player. And, you know, it's just funny that Wilson's the second pick. Dobbs is off the scrap heap. So there's this perception that, you know, Wilson, you got to give him every chance. To me, Dobbs is a better player. Dobbs gives you a chance to win that game last night. If you're getting him for free, like you got, like Minnesota got Dobbs, like if I'm the Jets, I would have had to look into it. I don't know if it's, hey, we picked this kid second. We have to give him every opportunity. I'm sure that's a lot of it. But to me, like if you're giving me Dobbs last night, they have a much better chance of winning that game. He can at least move the ball. He's at least serviceable.
And I understand keeping Zach Wilson as a developmental piece because of how much you invested him, drafting him where you did. But yeah, exactly. Like you see what you had to give up for a guy like Josh Dobbs. And I feel like it makes it painful watching what Zach Wilson is doing out there. Like he needs to continue to sit back and watch and learn and grow and develop. And he's not given that opportunity right now, thrust into the fire. Some numbers for the folks at home: 1 touchdown, 18 punts the last two games on the season, 16.5 points per game for the Jets, 30th in the NFL, 272.9 yards per game, 31st, 169.5 passing yards per game, 30th, third down percentage. They're dead last, 3 of 17 on third down last night. Oh, all the sacks that he took yesterday. We talk about that offensive line. I feel like every way you look, it was a struggle. And then even with that, I also feel like I can't put it all on Zach Wilson because all the penalties that they were taking, it was like every time you look up at the Jets, something is going wrong. And it wasn't even all Zach Wilson as much as we want to blame him. I just feel bad for the darn New York Jets defense. And if I'm them, I'm upset at Robert Saleh. And you hear all of the press conferences last night. Well, it's like all apologizing to the defense, essentially, like you guys gave us an opportunity and we couldn't get there. Like even one of the Chargers touchdowns was that 87 yard punt return after a 3-and-out, by the way, that the defense forced.
Yeah, you read all those numbers and they were ugly, but somehow watching it was even uglier.
Yeah,
and I agree, the defense is good. I mean, it's not a great defense, but it's a top, you know, probably 5 or 7 defense in the league. It's a really good defense. And you never know. Sometimes these teams, they say, hey, the Jets can't do anything on offense, so they play more conservative, and that helps their numbers. But it's a legitimately good defense. It's a shame we didn't get to see. I know the offensive line's not good, so the team's not perfect. But Rodgers with that defense, with Garrett Wilson, that would have been fun to see how good they could have been. And I think it's telling. I don't know how much of the broadcast you watched, but I was flipping around. Aikman, Peyton Manning, these former quarterbacks have a level of disdain, not just for Wilson, but the concepts of the Jets offense. They're very critical. And, you know, these broadcasters, especially the former players, they're very careful about being critical. They usually, you know, don't get on the players too much. They're more conservative in terms of their analysis. They were killing Wilson. They were killing the Jets offense. So I think that tells you something where they see, you know, how bad this is when you hear these former players and great players like Peyton Manning and like Aikman, the disdain they have for this Jets offense and for Wilson.
Well, and that started right from the jump, too, where Aikman's like, that's a throw you have to make as an NFL quarterback, right? So it was like right away from that opening drive. But also,
and that's about as critical as they get. That's about as damning a statement as you can make. Hey, you have to make that throw when you're in the NFL. Whereas opposed to, remember like a month or so ago, they played the Chiefs and Chris Collins were like, oh man, Wilson, he's not as bad as people think. Look at this throw, look at that throw. And Aikman was the total opposite. Aikman's like, hey, you got to make that throw.
Yeah, I'm not going to apologize for this kid anymore. He's had enough of a sample size for us to see. But then you look at this 21-point win for the Chargers, right? If you hadn't watched the game, you'd probably think from the outside looking in, oh, LA dominated in this one. I bet Justin Herbert had a day. The Jets actually outgained LA yesterday. The Chargers only had 191 yards of total offense. Justin Herbert, a career low 136 passing yards. So it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows for this Chargers team either. From a betting perspective, by the way, Will, this week, unders 11-3 and primetime unders now 75%, 21-7 on the year, 10-1 the last 3 weeks.
Now you hear that and you think, all right, I'm going to let me ask you, when you hear that, do you think, all right, I'm going to start playing these unders? Or you say, all right, now they're going to over-adjust and I'm going to have to play the over. It's interesting. And I remember, you know, doing podcasts, doing the Megapod before the week, and it was like, man, these quarterbacks are so bad. And I guess you just can't make the line low enough when you have the DeVitos of the world, Jordan Love. I mean, you could go down the line with these quarterbacks. And Herbert's not even one of the bad ones. Herbert's one of the good ones. Yeah. I can't remember a time when the quarterback play in this league was so bad from top to bottom. And when the quarterbacks are bad, the other team plays conservative. It's just, it's hard to get a lot of points. So I don't know going forward that the unders are still going to be there, but it's hard to get to the over with some of these bad, really bad quarterbacks.
Yeah, bad quarterbacks and a lot of rookies that have been thrust into action. Right. Nine starting rookie quarterbacks this year, which is tied for an NFL record for most for a season. And who knows still what we're going to come. We're only midway through. Chargers, by the way, 6-game under streak after their first 2 games of the season were over. So we'll see if the books start to over adjust. It's always stinks too when there's been like an under streak like this. And you're like, all right, now I'm going to jump in on the unders. And that's when it starts flipping. We're going to take our first time out here on the Lombardi line, but we're just getting started. When we return, some of the big news and notes, injury updates around the National Football League. Don't go anywhere. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are officially midway through this NFL season, and if you're not listening to the GM Shuffle podcast, you're missing out, because if you love this show, you're obviously going to love the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi. He gives his unfiltered opinion on players, teams, coaching decisions every Monday and Thursday all throughout the season. So a new episode hot off the press is yesterday. Download and subscribe to the GM Shuffle podcast from VSiN and DraftKings today, wherever you get your podcast. Super easy to do. Welcome back into the Lombardi line. Will Hill in for Michael today. Stormy Bonantoni with you out here live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. And Will, just wrapped up our Monday Night Football talk, which, as exhilarating as it was, I think it's good that we can move off of that bad boy. We had a lot of news and updates, particularly to the quarterback position, coming through today. According to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler this morning, today's practice for Bears quarterback Justin Fields is going to be critical in determining his availability for Thursday Night Football coming up against the Panthers this week. Matt Eberflus yesterday said he was day-to-day. He's practiced twice now in a limited capacity after missing 3 state starts with that dislocated thumb. So coach is looking to see what he can handle today. The Bears are a 3.5-point favorite on Thursday night against Carolina. Do you get the feel that we're going to get the Justin Fields show and move off of Tyson Bagent?
Line certainly seems to think it. The market certainly seems to think it. I mean, Bagent, and this would be a separate, and you know, it's part of the conversation, but what's the difference between Bagent and Fields in terms of the number? Maybe a point and a half, but Bagent wouldn't be laying 3.5 against anybody. Yeah. So market seems to think it's Fields. I think it fits the time window for Fields to come back. You could say, hey, what's the point of bringing Fields back? You know what? Just play the young kid, tank, get a better pick. But remember, the Bears, you know, they have the Panthers pick anyway. So maybe their motivation, you know, isn't where it would be for a team that's rebuilding here. I don't make a huge difference between Bagent and Fields, but it certainly seems like it's going to be Fields. I like an under here. Panthers turned the ball over, what, two turnovers for a touchdown for the Panthers the other day. That was another misleading final where the Colts did nothing on offense, but still won, and still won going away, similar to Jets Chargers. And the Bears were -5 in turnovers. I think it was 5-0 in turnovers. So I think both teams will come in and say, hey, let's take care of the ball, short week, ball security, let's be a little more conservative on offense. So this under has come down, and I can see why. I like an under here. Shop around 39, 39.5. 40, all sort of key numbers. I would certainly look at an under though here.
Yeah, you talk about those turnovers. It was interesting. I kind of half watched the Bears Saints game this weekend, and it gave me the vibes that if the Bears just don't turn the ball over 5 times, they could have won that game. Like, between turnovers and penalties, they outplayed the Saints in a lot of ways, but turnovers and penalties, all the shoot yourself in the foot ways that they could, That's what happened. And Bajent himself, 3 interceptions. So let's hope, I'm sure they're hoping at least that Justin Fields can grip the football a little bit this week. You know, that would be a fortunate change of events for them.
You said you have to watch, though. I don't know what you think of Bajent. He's not bad, though. I don't know. Like, you cover the sideline games. You don't do too many Shepherd University games, so I don't think you've seen him in person. But what have you thought about Bajent? Because I don't mind him. I think he's a career backup, but I don't think he's terrible. I don't think he, you know, like DeVito or some of these other guys, like, he's not the worst quarterback I watched this week, which is a low bar, I understand.
And he's certainly confident. We know that much. But no, like, he's made good plays, but the turnovers are problematic. Like, you can't have interceptions like that. I like what he's able to bring with the ability with his legs. He's clearly got a good arm on him, but accuracy, obviously an issue. And that's why he was an undrafted rookie out of a Division II school, right? So a lot of those things don't just go away, especially at the NFL level when you're playing tougher competition. The Saints aren't. What was that school that all the big stats of his turnovers came through? The Colorado School of Mines, I think it was. Like, it's not the Colorado School of Mines that you're playing anymore, all right? But I like that thought process with the under in this game coming up on Thursday Night Football. Panthers really struggling not only to win but to cover games this season as well, though. 1-6-1 ATS, 0-4 against the number on the road. One area they have been winners, though, Will, listen to this: first quarters. 7-1 ATS in the first quarter of the season. Best mark in the NFL. I think that might be the only thing that we say about Carolina having the best mark in the NFL.
Hang the banner.
There we go.
Hang the banner. Hey, at least, you know what? They're having a bad season. They're not winning any games. They're not covering any games. At least they'll get a good draft pick. Oh, wait, no, they don't have their draft pick. It's too bad.
That's a rough one. You shouldn't have done them dirty like that. Yeah, the Bears currently in position for the second and third overall picks. The Arizona Cardinals sitting in the spot there to potentially have a first overall pick themselves. And they have already started more quarterbacks this year, Will, than they have wins this season. And now it appears that Jonathan Gannon wants to add another one in there. And is going to start Kyler Murray this Sunday, which I'm very curious your opinion on that. And again, they do give the caveat barring a setback, right? Although he's been a full participant in practice the last 2 weeks, his 21-day window to be activated to the roster is tomorrow. But given like the financial implications of should Kyler Murray get hurt, the guaranteed money at stake here, and you already know that you're going to be in a position to get a high draft pick, why are you going to mess that up and have Kyler Murray go out there and play football games? I don't understand it.
If you're looking to me for answers, you're coming to the wrong person. I don't get it at all. It makes no sense to me. Now, Murray's not great, but he's okay enough. And again, this roster isn't great either, but their schedule's pretty soft. They've got some winnable games. They play the Bears, the Texans this week against Atlanta. Like, their schedule's easy enough, and Murray's good enough where he's probably going to get you another win or two. You probably get to 3 wins, maybe 4. They're 1-8, so probably 4 is the ceiling, but 3 or 4 wins might be enough to knock you out. Like, if you just look around the league, the Giants probably aren't going to win another game with DeVito at quarterback. They're at 2. You have competition with Carolina and Chicago. Like, I don't get the point of trying to get to 2 or 3 wins. This idea of, oh, we got to see what we have with Murray for the new regime, the new offense. You're going to cost yourself a quarterback. Once you get past the top 2, there's a drop off after May and after Caleb Williams. I don't understand it. I always assumed this whole year that Murray was going to sit out and they were just kind of lying about, hey, he's going to be, we'll play him when he's ready, and they would just keep pushing it off and pushing it off. Sounds like he's ready to go. I mean, I don't know what you're getting from him in terms of a performance here. It's been a long layoff. If they hang a rushing prop, I would look at under, because I think coming off that leg injury, I just don't know that he's going to be as willing to run or the same runner right away. But I'm shocked they're playing him. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. None.
Yeah, like I would have thought another reason to sit him to preserve the trade value, but maybe you want to play him to see what he's got, maybe not for the future for your franchise, but to show other teams what he's worth and that he's, I don't know. Like, every time I try to talk myself into it making sense, it just doesn't make sense, especially when you think about the $29.9 million in 2025 salary compensation that's guaranteed if he doesn't pass his physical in March. So I don't know. I thought you got rid of Colt McCoy and Josh Dobbs because you were too at risk of winning games. And now you're just putting Kyler Murray back in there.
And if you're going to tank, Toon was the perfect guy. I mean, that was not a pretty box score. What did they have? I think they had 58 total yards of offense. And again, you comb through some of these box scores, it's tough to watch. It's some bad football. I don't get it. I really don't understand it. Even if you like Murray going forward, you tank, you get the first pick, and that first pick is going to be a huge commodity. Look at what the Bears got from the Panthers, and that's not even, Young's not even the same prospect that Caleb Williams is. So you could have gotten an absolute haul and say, hey, we'll build around Murray and we'll build around the picks we get from him. It makes no sense to me. None at all.
So that line this weekend moved from Cardinals plus 2.5 to 1 against the Falcons, total 42. And I know you mentioned the rushing prop, but like now you go from looking at the Cardinals with Clayton Tune as an auto fade and survivor, and that kind of goes away with Kyler Murray at quarterback. What are your general expectations for how he's going to fit into this offense? He's had a couple weeks at practice, like we said, fully out there practicing. He hasn't been in a limited capacity anymore coming off of the ACL. So do you think that it's a quick transition for him or no?
I wouldn't assume that. And again, he's had more talent in the past around him. They really stripped that roster. They're not good on the offensive line, not good on defense. And again, if you're playing a guy coming off an injury, you really want to put him behind a bad offensive line. At 2, 2.5, it was an easy teaser leg. At 1, I would just wait. If you get to 1.5, it's a nice teaser partner. That should be a close game, I would think. Falcons aren't blowing away anybody. I don't know that we've gotten any word on who's playing quarterback for Lynn. I would assume it's Heinicke.
Yeah.
Arthur Smith, not the most honest, friendly guy with the media, so you don't know, you know, what he's telling you and things like that. So Cardinals are an obvious teaser leg. I look at Murray for an under for a rushing prop. I don't have any interest in betting this side straight up. I can't imagine a person sitting there watching this game without a bet on it. But if you look at the NFC, Atlanta's, I guess, still in the mix here for a playoff spot. They don't give you any sort of good feeling in terms of their defense. I mean, blowing that game the other day was so bad. It's just a strangely coached team. Smith might be in over his head, but nothing for me. Cardinals on a teaser. If you get it to 1.5, up to like the 7.5, that would be it.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Falcons a little bit more later on in the show.
Do we have to?
We unfortunately do, but it's good because we'll continue to just pour on Arthur Smith and his awful explanations for his lack of usage with Bijan Robinson near the end zone and in general when you have a guy that is averaging 5 yards per carry and you keep using the guy that's averaging 3.2 yards per carry instead. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But because, oh no, he opens things up for everybody else, then how come when you have 4 opportunities at the goal line after you get the ball back, you don't have him on the field at all? But you have him, he opens up opportunities for other guys. I hate it all.
This is about as fired up as I've seen you get. I really like it. And Pitts, too, they drafted
Pitts. I'm a fantasy owner for Bijan Robinson, Will.
I know. I've had Pitts on my team, too. Pitts is just, it's very frustrating. I get it.
Yes. Why is Kyle Pitts not a red zone target? Things I will never understand. Okay, we have to take a quick timeout here, but you mentioned the Vikings obviously getting that win over the Atlanta Falcons. I'm excited for our next guest, Tank Williams, who's going to join us, former NFL safety. Get his thoughts on Josh Dobbs as a former player, the performance that we saw from him coming in, which is 5 days. Now, could he be somebody that could lead Minnesota to potentially be in a playoff spot over 500? We'll discuss that and a whole lot more in a moment. Stay with us on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can also check on the top VSiN experts leaderboard where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, betting guides, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You can sign up now and get access to everything we do through May 1st. Only $120 at VSiN.com/subscribe. In about 15 minutes, we'll get back to our NFL talk with Tank Williams, who's going to join us right now. Let's dive into some college football. Excited to welcome into the show Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime from 3 to 6 Pacific, 6 to 9 Eastern, as well as the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Does a great job. Episodes with Adam Burke, Matt Humans every single week. Tim, welcome in. Thanks so much for doing this, buddy.
Of course. Happy to jump on. And we got Will the Thrill here. So, you know. Ginger power unite.
It's like looking in a mirror over there, I'm sure. Welcome in. Let's get to kind of big picture talk first with the second edition of College Football Playoff Rankings coming out tonight. With all of those kind of top dogs getting wins this past weekend, do you expect any movement? Because obviously not all of these wins are created equal. Georgia gets a win over number 12 Missouri. Could that potentially bump them up over Ohio State? I don't know. I'm very curious your thought process on how that top six might play out today.
Yeah, I was pretty confident Ohio State would be one last week just based off of the resume. And the resume certainly took a hit this week, right? They didn't play great against Rutgers. They get the win. They actually get the cover, too, magically in that one. And Notre Dame lost. So that was a win that they had over a top 15 team. Notre Dame probably still ranked tonight, but doesn't look as good of a victory now. And then, you know, for Georgia, when you look at their schedule, it did get better when you play a team like Missouri and you win 30-21. So my gut tells me you might see Georgia jump to one. I would say if they don't get to one this week, they'll probably get to one next week because they play Ole Miss this week, assuming they win that game. So I think it's inevitable. Georgia will be the number one team in the country within a couple of weeks here. And then, you know, Michigan, finally, with one of the weakest schedules, you know, we've seen in quite some time, will finally get tested this week when they play Penn State. But that has not happened yet. So I think Michigan stays kind of status quo. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see what happens with 1-2 with Ohio State and Georgia. But I think a lot of us all kind of are of the same mindset of, you know, we think that this Ohio State team is flawed, but they're still undefeated. They have a much better resume than Georgia and Penn State, or excuse me, and Michigan to this point. So, you know, I think it's kind of six and half dozen the other for 1-2. But ultimately, I think Georgia guys does get up there with that schedule with Ole Miss and Tennessee the next couple of weeks, and it'll all sort itself out.
Tim, you mentioned they're flawed. Everyone's kind of flawed. It makes it fun. Yeah. It makes it wide open. If you're looking at a bet right now, I have nothing in pocket, a future to win the Heisman national title. Is there any value still out there?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a couple ways you can look at it. I think Alabama, believe it or not, has a little bit of value. I took some 14-1 on them a couple weeks ago. It's down to 9-1 or so you can find out there in the market. And I think Oregon's interesting, too. Both of those teams have no margin of error, right? Oregon and Alabama both have a loss. In the playoff era, we've never seen a two-loss team make it, and I don't expect that to happen in the final year of the four-team playoff either. So Alabama obviously has to beat Georgia the final week of the season in the SEC championship in order to get into the playoff, and then Oregon, on the other hand, has to beat Washington. So, you know, I do think this Alabama team, guys, is starting to come into gear a little bit here when it comes to, you know, the defense is playing well. Jalen Milroe utilizing his legs, rushing over for 100 yards. So I think that's kind of an interesting way to look at this. And then, you know, for the Heisman Trophy, you know, we've certainly talked about this quite a bit. You look at, you know, Penix and Nick sitting there at around plus 150 and 2-1. Yeah, I think you're a little bit late to the party on those two particular players. I still don't understand this Marvin Harrison fascination for Heisman Trophy. I mean, Devontae Smith's numbers, guys, in 2020 blew his numbers out of the water. I mean, Marvin Harrison is ninth in the country in receiving yards. I don't get it. You know, Heisman Trophy, you know, you look at the straw poll that came out today, they have Marvin Harrison second in the Heisman. Why? I mean, they went to Notre Dame. He had three catches for 32 yards. This past week, he had four catches for 25 yards. So I think if you're going to go, you know, Heisman Trophy look, you know, I would say maybe J.J. McCarthy, because he's got two big games to come. And if he plays well this weekend against Penn State, those 8-1 odds probably shrink a little bit. So I'd say if you're looking for, you know, longest shots, I would say Oregon, Alabama, those could be two teams to look at for the championship. And then J.J. McCarthy, just because they haven't played really anybody yet, could be the look for the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, I like too to make the college football playoff. Alabama's still available at plus 240, which I think is intriguing. I thought it was really interesting that Oregon, despite being sixth now behind Washington because they lost that head-to-head, they're actually minus 110 to make the CFP, whereas Washington plus 145 because people have seen the way that they've continually gotten better. And if they win that Pac-12 championship, give them the upper hand. You mentioned a couple times Penn State, Michigan. We see that number now 4.5. Michigan's laying in Penn State. How do you see this one playing out? How do you think that Michigan comes to the party?
Well, look, I mean, last year Michigan dominated them, and you know everything that's going on off the field. I'll believe it when I see it with Penn State. I just every year, and look, I got talked into it this year. I took a little plus 550 on them to win the Big Ten, and I think this team is incredibly flawed. You know, they beat up on the lesser opponents. You know, you put up 51 on Maryland. Congratulations. You get a late cover against Northwestern early in the year. Way to go. But beat someone that you're supposed to beat, you know, or, you know, at the same level. You know, we've seen this year after year where James Franklin has, you know, the hype coming into the year. Okay, Sean Clifford leaves. Drew Aller's supposed to be the guy. So could Penn State win this game? I guess. I just don't believe it. You know, I was really disappointed with the performance that we saw from Penn State against Ohio State. And you can make the argument, we don't know what Michigan is. That's very true. But at least Michigan, the last 2 years, the track record has told us that they can win these types of games. And I thought last year they really dominated this Penn State team. And what also hurts them, and I know it's not something that necessarily, guys, is, you know, massively part into power ratings or point spreads. But the fact that this is a noon game is really, in my opinion, a bummer for Penn State. I mean, the whiteout is one of the most intimidating factors in college football. You know, you have Death Valley at night down in Baton Rouge. You got some other spots. Look, I've been in a whiteout situation as a fan. It is terrifying if you're the opposition. And the fact that this is at noon Eastern as opposed to a night game, I think, is kind of a detriment there to Penn State. So, look, I'm not going to play this game because, you know, I like home dogs, you know, but I can't back Penn State here in this spot. They need to prove it to me because year after year, they have not in these big spots. They have not stepped up to the challenge in the past handful of years against Michigan and against Ohio State.
Tim, last couple of minutes, we got Maction, weekday Maction here. You mentioned off the air you like San Jose State. I'll just give you the floor. What's your favorite bet here on the board?
Yeah, I am intrigued by San Jose State. Little Mountain West action late night on Saturday night in San Jose. You know, we're kind of getting to that point of the year, guys, where bowl eligibility is in the grasp of some teams, and not every team is going to be motivated to reach bowl eligibility. But you think about San Jose State. They started 1-5. I mean, they had one of the most daunting schedules as a group of five team out there. You open up the season against USC. Labor Day weekend, you host Oregon State. Their first two conference games were Air Force and Boise. So they were really, you know, trying to paddle upstream, you know, right away after a 1-5 start to the year. They're now 4-5. You know, they are coming off a bye. And for Fresno State, the last 2 weeks, guys, they've been playing some big time games. You know, UNLV 2 weeks ago, UNLV drops a touchdown pass in the end zone. And then last week, they're going back and forth with Boise State. And I thought Andy Avalos, head coach of Boise State, made some critical mistakes. And Fresno was able to get the win and get the cover. So I just like the situational spot here for San Jose State. You look at the schedule, they need to go 2-1 down the stretch to get to a bowl. So I think San Jose State for me, guys, is an intriguing look late night, 10:30 Eastern. So your old get back game. I think San Jose State, this could be a good spot for them against a rival to get their fifth win of the season.
And Chevin Cordero, obviously a VSiN primetime guest, yes. We know. So there you go. Tim, really, really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.
Awesome stuff. Thanks, Make sure Tim. You check him out later on today on VSiN Primetime, as well as every week, the College Football Betting Podcast, wherever you get your podcast in the VSiN family of pods. I'm sad that we ran out of time, and maybe we can revisit this in hour two when Aaron Moore joins us to talk more college football later on. But with Air Force now just being absolutely terrible this past weekend, that opens the door up for potentially a Fresno State if they were to win that game for that group of five best team. Tulane keeps winning, but they've been struggling, and JMU, despite being undefeated, isn't bowl eligible right now. They did make another appeal to the NCAA today. Not sure if anything will come of that. We got to step aside. Tank Williams will join us next as we get back to the NFL.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Alongside Will Hill, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Excited to welcome into the program sports betting and fantasy analyst Tank Williams, also a former safety in the National Football League, and not to be discounted, first-team All-American at Stanford as well. So not only is he bigger, faster, stronger, but he's smarter than all of us as well. Welcome in, Tank. How are you?
Pretty good. How's it going, Stormy?
Good. Great to have you with us. We appreciate you, and always with the like clutch, cool background behind you as well. Love that.
We do what we can.
Well, let's dive into some of the big NFL topics right now. Curious from like a player's perspective, seeing what we got from Josh Dobbs this past week with the Minnesota Vikings going on as an underdog to beat the Atlanta Falcons. He had 5 days around his teammates, didn't know anybody's name. He's practicing his cadence with the starting center Bradberry on the sideline because nobody knows. Like, such a unique situation. How impressive was that? And have you ever experienced anything in the realm of that in your career with somebody having to step in on short notice?
No, absolutely not. Especially when you have a guy that's on the sideline, he actually has to bark out the cadence because he goes on the field and the offensive line hadn't heard it before. I mean, that's crazy to me. But when you think about the process of Kevin O'Connell having to bark out the play call to him, he has to regurgitate it to the offense, and then Kevin O'Connell has to give him the play call in terms that he understands. Then he has to process the defense to go out there and make a play, and he did that against the Atlanta Falcons. So, I mean, I applaud Joshua Dobbs. At the same time, that's an indictment on Atlanta Falcons defense. There's no way you're supposed to let a guy in that situation be able to perform, lead a comeback, and win a game against you. So as much as I want to applaud Joshua Dobbs because it's much due for what the performance he had against the Atlanta Falcons, like the Falcons at home, you have a quarterback that's only been with that team for 3 days. You got to win that game. You can't let him make those explosive plays on your defense like that.
Tank, life changes fast in the NFL. A month ago, the 49ers couldn't be beaten by anybody. Now they're looking to avoid a four-game losing streak, probably the game of the week this week against the Jags. Do you think this is just a blip on the radar, or you think, hey, they're going to get healthy and they're going to be okay? Where are you at with the 49ers here?
Well, as long as Trent Williams comes back along with Deebo Samuel, I think that'll help along with Chase Young. I mean, I think the 49ers had the players on their roster to win those games when those guys were out, but they lost their swag. And in the NFL, especially when you're playing against teams that are heating up, like say, for example, when you play against the Cincinnati Bengals, you had already seen that Joe Burrow's calf was getting healthy. He didn't have to deal with that Johnny Drive anymore for entourage. Like, it was all the way healed. So he was shaking off defenders, throwing the ball downfield all over the yard. And so when you're playing against teams that got their mojo back, you have to be able to equal that swag. And I think getting healthy along with bringing in Chase Young, that should help, because the one thing that the Niners defense were accustomed to doing last year, giving up those splash plays in the pass game, but they were also up near the top of the league in sacks. But now they're towards the bottom of the league in sacks, and that's why you go out and get a guy like Chase Young. Hopefully that helps solidify that defense and we start seeing them play like the Niners defense of old.
Yeah, and it was weird, too, those first two losses against Cleveland and Minnesota for San Francisco. Like, they were still just a play or two away from winning those games. Against the Bengals, though, they got beat. So now they have the bye week. They have the opportunity to rest, get healthy, as you mentioned. But the Jacksonville Jaguars are streaking right now. 5 straight wins and covers. They also get a bye week. What do you make of the number with San Francisco laying 3 in this spot against Jacksonville?
Yeah, this is an interesting spot because the Jaguars have protected Trevor Lawrence pretty well, and that's allowed him to be, pretty efficient in the pass game. I think Travis Etienne has been the game changer. He's been running the ball like crazy against every opponent that they face. So right now you have Jacksonville at +3 over on that 45.5. I'm really interested to see how Chase Young is going to be able to affect this game with Nick Bosa. So I would probably – I don't even know who's going to win this game, but I'll probably take the points down a little bit, maybe to like that 39 area, and then try to bang the over that way versus kind of messing around with the over right here at 45.5, just in case those defenses show up. But I would like to see some points in this one, and I think that we could get it as they still try to fit those pieces into that San Francisco defense. And at the same time, I feel like San Francisco, fully healthy, should be able to score on the Jags defense.
Another big game, Ravens laying 6 to the Browns. Now, You've been in these defensive meetings. Just put your former player hat on. If you're watching Watson as an opponent, are they saying behind the scenes, hey, he's not the same player, we don't have the same fear, or is it, hey, he's going to get it back at some point? Where are you at with this game and just Watson in general?
He came to life a little bit last week, even though it was against the Arizona Cardinals defense. You know, Amari Cooper had 5 receptions on 5 targets, over 100 yards and a touchdown. And so when you show some signs of life in the pass game, you're like, okay, we maybe need to prepare for the Deshaun Watson of old. But that being said, when you're playing against the Cleveland Browns, your number one emphasis is to take away the run game. It used to be Nick Chubb. Now you have to take away the two-headed monster of Jerome Ford and Kareem Hunt. So you do that and try to force Deshaun Watson to beat you with his arm. He's been, you know, he's been susceptible to some turnovers this year, and try to see if you can force him into a fumble and an interception. And I think the way that Baltimore Ravens defense has been playing, that's going to be that motto. And then when you flip it around on the other side, that Cleveland Browns defense feels like they have to win the game. And they really didn't have a fair shot when they played the Ravens earlier this season, where they had DTR at quarterback because Deshaun Watson was hurt. So I think they're going to try to put their best foot forward, try to show that they're one of the best defenses, not only in the AFC North, but in the league. And so that's why I expect this total to be low. So I would probably take Baltimore money line. I feel pretty good about them playing at home and winning this game. And I would bring the number up to 42.5 and then bang the under.
That's going to be a fun one in the AFC North. The Ravens have looked like one of the best teams in the league right now. And that whole division, so competitive. The Steelers are going to be in action this week against the Green Bay Packers. And I don't think anybody expected them to be 5-3 at this point this week either. How much do you think they take advantage of this Packers team? I know Green Bay's coming off of a win, but it was also against a very injured Rams team without their starting quarterback.
Yeah, it was against the Rams. And so when you have a GM that's coming out midway through the season saying that he still doesn't know if their QB1 is their QB1. You understand that that team has issues. And now the Pittsburgh Steelers are starting to get healthy. You got Cam Hayward back on Thursday Night Football. Minkah Fitzpatrick is trying to make it back for this game. Jordan Love hasn't shown me that he can go out there and be the top-notch defense. So I expect the Pittsburgh Steelers to cover in this one, win this game. I would go Pittsburgh money line. I would take the total up to 42.5 again, and then bang the under on that one, just because I don't expect to see a lot of points in this one. I think that the Green Bay Packers defense is going to try to show up because they're not expecting too much from the offense, and I think the Pittsburgh defense shows up. And so we're going to get a low-scoring game with Pittsburgh winning it ultimately, because Jordan Love and that Green Bay Packers offense, they really can't do anything on the field in the given week.
Right around the midway point of the season, MVP race, there's no clear front runner. Do you have a guy you like that has some betting value going forward for MVP here?
I don't have the odds right in front of me right now, but Lamar Jackson, man, I've been, you know, touting him just from the very beginning of the season. I like what I saw from Todd Monken and how he's trying to implement some of the short passing game while also still leaning on the run. And so he's been an efficient passer. We haven't seen that blow up game like he had last year against the Miami Dolphins, but we know that they have it in him. And I think it's only going to be a matchup coming where he'll have another shootout, maybe with Joe Burrow coming downstream or something like that. But I believe he's been playing really good ball, but I'm not sure how much time that we're going to talk about him. But man, CJ Stroud, like, he's not going to get MVP, but rookie of the year, he may be the best rookie that we've seen. And I don't know how long, because I'm a huge Andrew Luck fan. You know, I'm a Stanford guy, and this Andrew Luck threw for over 4,000 yards. He had like 28 touchdowns and 18 picks, something like that. This dude, CJ Stroud, is throwing for 2,000 yards, over 2,000 yards already, 14 touchdowns, but the key number to me is only one interception. To me, that's impressive as hell. And I know we're starting to really talk him up now after that 470-yard passing out and 5 touchdowns against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But, I mean, I think we're not even talking about him enough, because this performance that he's doing, especially protecting the ball as a rookie against NFL defenses, is just truly impressive.
Yeah, those 470 yards, 5 touchdowns, and no picks in that game. And then you lead that game-winning drive. Really, really impressive, the poise he came with. A $5 favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year, CJ Stroud is. We've only got about 60 seconds left, Tank, but if you're the Carolina Panthers, and I know they have a lot of issues outside of quarterback this year, but are you regretful a little bit that you didn't end up getting Stroud the way that he's come out for Houston?
I mean, you know, they have to be at least somewhat salty the way that CJ Stroud is playing, and Bryce Young really hasn't lived up to that number one billing as of yet, but You really can't view it that way because C.J. Stroud has a different offensive coordinator. We understand what that Shanahan tree can do as far as scheming up plays for their quarterbacks and putting them in the best situation to succeed. So different offensive coordinator, different head coach, a different vibe in the building. I really like the way that D'Amico Ryans has brought that new energy and vibe to Houston. And they feel like they can win on any given Sunday. And I really don't see that type of energy coming out of the Carolina Panthers organization. So who knows that if Bryce Young was in that situation in Houston, he couldn't be doing the same thing that C.J. Stroud is doing right now. So I understand we want to indict Bryce Young for his limitations so far to start this season, but it may be more than just Bryce Young behind center.
Great perspective. Appreciate your insight, Tank. Thanks for doing this.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
All right. We got to step aside here on the Lombardi line, but we will reset for hour two in a moment. Big thanks to Tank Williams and Tim Murray for coming on hour one. More great stuff to follow as we welcome in our DraftKings Network audience next as well.